I have a question.
Yes.
Bishop Mark, when talking about this idea of reconciliation and what you talked so beautifully about individual autonomy and the pursuit of, you know, people that did wrong, and this kind of framework for crime, so to speak, that's so embedded in how we perceive reconciliation. I was wondering, and then you alluded to mass incarceration, especially of Indigenous peoples here in Canada. Could you talk at all about that crisis of incarceration and the prison industrial complex in Canada and kind of visions that you see moving past that? Like, what can Christianity speak to about reconciliation?
Well, there's a whole bunch of, there's a whole suite of things that have to do with incarceration. I've been contacted recently about the issue of solitary confinement. There are conditions in the prisons. There's conditions in the jails that are particularly toxic and particularly directed towards Indigenous people. So a lot of the people in solitary confinement, which is a horrible system, and hopefully we're going to see action politically on that. What I see happening in terms of incarceration is that you have a huge overrepresentation of Indigenous people in our prison systems. In some provinces, it's well over 50%. This, from my perspective, is the way in which the basic attitudes, fears, and prejudices that animated the residential schools get played out in some of the other systems that we're a part of. So that the way the system is rigged, so to speak, is particularly violent and particularly toxic to Indigenous people. So what is recognized, I think, and increasingly recognized, is that in the entire system, from from police officers to judges to the way that prisons operate, is that there is a particular bias against Indigenous people that gets enacted in the prison system, and so that the system itself operates negatively towards Indigenous people, and we see this overrepresentation. I think you see the same kind of thing in the United States towards African Americans, and I would say in people of color in Canada as well. So I hope that's some kind of response to what you're saying, or to what you're asking about. I see this as, there's a whole world of things that we have to respond to. But one of the things that I hope that we can respond to as a church is having some kind of voice in this system, a voice of sanity, a voice of reason, and a voice of reconciliation that will speak to the ways in which prejudice becomes institutionalized and operates in prison systems. Yeah. So, thank you.
Yeah, I think just adding to that, that the...
Please do.
Carceral mentality is so fixated on punishment.
Yeah.
And you even hear this in our discourse about reconciliation, as people say, well, I'm not guilty, you know, like I didn't do anything wrong. And so we have this obsession and fixation on punishment and on individual crime and things like that. And I think part of decolonizing healing and reconciliation is moving away from that carceral blame, guilt, punishment, especially because, you know, prison is punishment, residential schools were punishment. Yeah. You know, the welfare system enacts huge punishment on families. And so, yeah, like, what is a decolonized way of looking at healing in communities that's post-carceral, something that
that's good.
I've been thinking about.
That's good. I like that. You should have answered your question.
No, good. He gave me a lot to think about, so thank you. Other questions?
I'd just like to ask, how do we teach our young people about this? I mean, naturally, this whole group is 50 plus. I have an example. Oh, okay. Okay, all right. Okay, okay. All right, generally speaking. I have an example. This past summer, a gentleman in my neighborhood went missing. He's still missing.
Missing?
Yes, missing.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I went to an organization to pick up some flyers to distribute in my neighborhood. I encountered a young indigenous gentleman at this organization. He's only been here in Toronto 2 weeks at the time. I spoke to him for maybe 10, 15 minutes. He seemed like a wonderful individual.
Yeah.
Full of hope, full of excitement. He was here in Toronto for 2 weeks. He'd never been to Toronto. And I was just having a general conversation, waiting to pick up these flyers. And his new partner of 2 weeks came up to me, thinking that I was hitting on him. And I basically said, I'm just having a lovely conversation with this gentleman. And I went to leave the building and went down the elevator with them, discussing this missing person. He basically tried to give me some bullshit answer as to where this missing person was and that to stay away from his new boyfriend.
Oh, I see.
So what I'm wondering is, here are two young gentlemen in their early 20s that clearly were not getting the message out.
Yeah.
To either indigenous young men coming to Toronto who want to start a new life, education, the whole bit, and yet here is an impressing white young gentleman doing that right to someone within 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, Justice Sinclair often said that education created this problem. Education has to be part of the answer to this problem. I think that somebody was asking me earlier tonight about what I see going on in the school system, and I have, I'm cautiously hopeful that a new way of thinking about Indigenous issues is beginning to permeate the school system and the way that it presents these issues and ideals. I think that we as a church could participate in that in a way of spiritual formation that would help free people from the prejudice of the past and orient them towards the positiveness of a shared and livable future. I think that we as religious people have done a horrible job in that we have allowed the culture in general to shape people's horizon, values, fears, and ideas. And I think that what we have to do once again is to influence, first of all, ourselves in creating a different kind of mindset relative to these things having to do with Indigenous people specifically, but to these larger issues of human life and human flourishing. So I'm cautiously hopeful at a basic level that these ideas are beginning to influence the school systems, but I would beg us as a religious organization to shape our own understanding, our own way of thinking, our own way of life in a more positive, livable way. Those are the only things that I see on the horizon. In the meantime, and concurrent with all of that, I see a lot of what I would call these forces of reconciliation beginning to have influence and impact on the way people think and act. So thank you for the question.
Okay, I'll first say that I'm mainly from Saskatchewan, which has a very large Indigenous population.
Indeed.
And so my question is about the issue around power and who speaks for whom. Because I noticed you didn't use that language at all. And it seems to be maybe where we're at. And for example, institutions that refuse to hire Indigenous, but by saying the right things, they're saying we're doing the right thing. And so it's the issue that is hardest to deal with. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, or do you understand the question?
If I understand what you're saying, and I think I do, what we're seeing is the distance between what is stated in terms of what is acceptable and right, and the way that people act, and the way particularly institutions, and I would include businesses and all sorts of things like that, the way that they act, there is a significant lag time between the moment when it becomes unacceptable to say, I would never hire an Indigenous person, to when Indigenous people have equal access to business and governmental and school opportunities that everyone else has. There's still a huge disconnect between the ideology of society and the way in which those things operate in terms of their on the ground. So I think that the 94 calls to action are addressed to these various segments within society to try to get at that issue of how power operates, of how institutions operate. So, thank you.
Yeah. Can you speak a little more about how the healing process takes place for the individual? You spoke about the victim becoming the survivor, and then they open themselves up to the mystical healing, and that goes out. Any examples that I've ever seen, for instance, here people, Indigenous people have come and spoken about their own personal experiences. They're overwhelmed with emotion still, with the pain of what they've had to experience.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, it seems to me that the abuse, especially abuse of children, can never be healed.
A number of years ago, I was in a meeting in Alaska, and the entire group were Indigenous people, all of whom had experienced significant trauma during growing up because of abuse, physical and sexual, and everybody in the room had that experience. Virtually all of that was related to trauma that had to do with colonization, with residential schools and other institutions that had traumatized people, and then that trauma spread from the victims to other victims. And we were there, and then one young woman got up and very courageously said, all of us have experienced this kind of trauma, but today, the very best thing that we can do and say is that the cycle stops with me. And I think that that is what's important to me. I'm the grandson of a residential school survivor. His children were massively affected by that experience and passed that on to my generation in the form of physical, sexual, and a number of other types of abuse. I believe through the grace of God, through the help of therapy, through my Christian faith, through a whole bunch of other things, I believe that I have not passed that on to my children. I certainly haven't passed on to them the experience that I had of daily intensive trauma relative to those things. So I'm a believer that even though we are shaped by these experiences, that we can find a place of wholeness and healing and survival that interrupts the flow of the ongoing flow of trauma from one generation to another. And I have a lot of confidence, a lot of hope that we'll see more and more of that as victims become survivors, as they attend to their own healing, they will be able to interrupt that cycle of trauma that we see continually influencing people. So I'm a believer in it. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I get out his little present here.
Oh, wow.
Please join me again in thanking Bishop Mark so thank much you. For his tremendous thank presentation.
You. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Lovely. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, so much for coming. I just want to let you know of one of our upcoming events. On January, I believe it's 17th, it's a Wednesday, we're going to be having an interfaith panel on hope. And one of the speakers will be Imam Dwyer, who is a Muslim chaplain who spent a lot of time as a chaplain in prisons and now is the Muslim chaplain at Ryerson. So he's an amazing speaker. And so he'll be with us for an interfaith panel on hope in January. And also mark your calendars. One of our upcoming Truth and Reconciliation lectures is February 7th. And that is with Alfredo Barahona. And he works for the organization called Kairos. And what his work does is connecting diasporic communities here in Canada with Indigenous solidarity. Because a lot of diasporic peoples, folks coming from the Caribbean, parts of Africa, Central America, Latin America, are Indigenous peoples that have been affected by colonialism. Whether through slavery or forces of colonial violence on their Indigenous territories, and come to Canada with that lived memory and experience here, but a lot of the discourse around Indigenous issues are very white-centric. So what Alfredo works on is connecting diasporic communities and diasporic experiences with Indigenous communities here and creating that dialogue. So really powerful, beautiful work that he does. For example, we did the Kairos blanket exercise, right, a couple months ago, I guess actually a year ago now, here. And so one of the projects of Kairos is that they translated the blanket exercise into multiple languages, including Spanish. And the dialogues that those people have in those spaces is very profound. So that's his work. So he's going to be joining us here on February 7th. So that'll be an exciting event to mark your calendars for and invite friends to. So thank you all so much for coming, and God bless you, and get home safe.